This is the Stella Culinary School Podcast, Episode 4, The Basics of Blanching. This is the Stella Culinary School Podcast, found online at stellaculinary.com. My name's Jacob. Thank you once again for joining me today. We're going to be talking about a very basic technique, but one that is commonly misunderstood. In fact, the finer points are actually lesser known than they should be, and that is blanching. But first, I want to talk real quick about this really cool event we just had, and we're going to have another one coming up. And what we did is we're calling it the Wood Fire Piggy event, but really what we were calling it for the customers was Taming Fire and Water, because it was a cocktail party slash sort of a party that featured our beautiful 64-inch wood fire oven, which we lovingly call the mistress, because whoever gets involved with the wood fire oven turns into a love affair. And it was really cool, though, because we got in this 30-pound suckling pig, and we whole roasted it in the wood fire oven, and we served it alongside a bunch of charcuterie and some different, you know, fairly rustic side dishes, including some potato gratin with some sherry-soaked figs and a nice pomegranate stuffing, all of which that were baked in the wood fire oven. So it was pretty cool. We had a lot of fun with that. And it's just it was something that we did for a good friend of ours who has a lot of parties at Stella, and it was such a big success that we're now offering it to the general public as far as just one of our options of different menus that you can choose from when you come and have an event. So if you never had a whole roasted pig, or if you had one and you found out how much you loved it, now is your chance. So if you find yourself in our area or coming up to do an event with us, we are now offering the whole roasted piggy dinner. So in today's discussion segment, we're going to play a quick game, and this isn't one that I invented. It's one that's been hanging around forever now, and you'll hear it commonly discussed among cooking and chef circles, and you'll see it on the cooking forums, but it's a lot of fun to play, and it is called Death Row Meal, or My Last Supper, whatever you want to call it. You know, Death Row seems a little dark, but really, I mean, the whole purpose of the game is to kind of get to know one another. It's, you know, you ask this question to a fellow friend who is a gourmand or a cook or who, you know, someone who's interested in food. And it is, if you were to die tomorrow, what would your last meal be? And it's really sort of very interesting to see people's reactions to this question and also their answers. And a lot of the times you get caught off guard by their answers because it's not this super uber fancy meal. And sometimes it is, you never know. But it really is a great way to see their personality, and really sort of allows their personality to shine through, because it's such a personal question. If you were to die tomorrow, think about this. If you were to die tomorrow, what would your last meal be? And for me, I have a couple of ones that I kind of would miss most definitely, so it'd have to be a smorgasbord. But when we originally played this game in the original Free Culinary School podcast, I threw up a dish that I make a lot at home. I don't really do a whole lot of recipes, especially on the Free Culinary School podcast. I really didn't do a whole lot of recipes. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to put up this kind of this guide to how I make my braised chicken thighs, because it's just something so simple, yet so tasty and so delicious. And it was the number one most viewed and most commented post ever on the Free Culinary School site. So I'm transferring I've transferred that recipe over to stellaculinary.com, and it will be in the episode 4 show notes. So you can go check out the episode 4 show notes of Stella Culinary School podcast, and there will be a link to this recipe. But I was so taken aback by how many people just love my very basic and very simple braised chicken thigh recipe. But there were some finer points too that I think take it to the next level and make it that much more special. And so one of the techniques that I use is, first, the whole purpose of eating chicken, in my opinion, is so you can have that nice, beautiful, crispy skin. And there's nothing more sad than when someone, you know, takes the time to brown that chicken skin and get it nice and beautiful, and they cover it completely with this braising liquid, only to sog out that skin. They no longer have that chicken skin, and they shouldn't have really browned it in the first place. So what I do is I use some blanched garlic and some sauteed cremini mushrooms and wilt a little bit of spinach and some balsamic, and that's my sauce base. And I build that sauce base in that braising liquid after I sear my chicken skin, and I take that, you know, the chicken out, and I nestle those thighs back into that sauce base. So just they're almost completely covered, but just the skin is slightly hovering above that braising liquid, and then I throw them in about a 400-degree oven, cook them for about 45 minutes, and that skin stays nice and crispy, and you have that juicy, succulent meat from the braising process of the chicken. And then I like to take out the chicken again, and I like to, you know, basically reduce down that liquid until the natural collagen from both the chicken stock that I use in the recipe and also that is released during the cooking process from the thighs starts to thicken that sauce. Remember, we talked about collagen thickening your stocks in episode 2. And I'll reduce that down and it'll turn into a sauce. And then I serve the warm chicken thighs over some steamed rice, which I have my wife make. My wife is a Filipino, so she can make a mean pot of sticky rice, which is just absolutely amazing with these braised chicken thighs in this sauce. So that's my last meal, just a very simple sort of thing. And, you know, when you work in a restaurant where people are looking to have not their standard fare, right, when they're looking to have something a little bit more special, and you're cooking that on a day-to-day basis, it's funny, when you go home, you really, really don't want that kind of food. You want something nice and simple. So these braised chicken thighs are what I crave and probably would be right up there with the last thing I would eat if I were to die tomorrow. And I would love to find out what your last meal would be. And maybe you have a recipe that goes along with it, and I'd love to see that. Head on over to stellaculinary.com, episode 4 show notes for the Stella Culinary School podcast, and let me know what your last meal would be and post a link to your recipe if you have that as well, or you can post that recipe on the forum. And to find a recipe for my braised chicken thighs with cremini mushrooms and poached garlic, I'll put that in the show notes as well. All right, so in today's technique segment, we're going to talk all about blanching. Now, what is blanching? Well, the Food Lover's Companion, now you did go out and buy a Food Lover's Companion, right? You need to buy one if you don't have one. So the Food Lover's Companion defines blanching as, and I'm quoting now, plunging food, usually vegetables and fruits, into boiling water briefly, then into cold water to stop the cooking process. Blanching is used to firm the flesh, to loosen skins, as with peaches and tomatoes, and to heighten and set color and flavor, as with vegetables before freezing. End quote. So really, at its most basic level, blanching is nothing more than a par cooking technique. It allows you to solidify the color in green vegetables and par cook starchy vegetables such as potatoes. Now, an example of this would be, you know, one of my favorite vegetable side dishes is sauteed green beans. Now, if you don't blanch your green beans first, they often start to discolor during the sauteing process before they're really evenly cooked all the way through. Now, on the other hand, when they're blanched first, before you saute the green beans, they're evenly cooked to al dente, which means, you know, firm to the bite, but there's still a little bit of give there. And that's about, you know, a cooking time of 2 minutes in boiling salted water. And then you shock them in an ice water both to set their color and to stop the cooking. Now, when you go to saute those green beans to order, or when you're ready to eat them, all you have to worry about is getting a little bit of caramelization on the outside of those green beans and maybe, you know, melting in some butter. I like to throw in some slivered almonds, you know, maybe some shallots. But you're more concentrating on heating those green beans back up and flavoring them, not so much on cooking them evenly through because the blanching process already took care of that for you. Now, another thing, too, is I love baby carrots, right? But again, you know, I like to saute them. You know, I like to do some glazed carrots and some butter and some fresh ginger root. But if they're thrown into a saute pan before they're even blanched, they're going to cook unevenly. They're going to cook on the outside a lot faster than on the inside. And discoloration will occur slightly. So again, I like to blanch my carrots before I cook them. Now also, you could always, you know, slow cook your carrots in a saute pan with a little bit of butter, maybe a little bit of water, and steam them. But in a restaurant environment, that doesn't really work that well because, you know, people are hungry and they want to eat now. You can't say, well, look, you got to wait for your carrots to be done. I'm going to take a half hour to cook your carrots. That's not how it works. So, you know, some brief blanching beforehand before service, and then when they order, all you got to do, again, is heat your carrots through using a little bit of butter, a little bit of ginger in the pan, and presto magico, you got some nice, tasty carrots. Now, there's three separate techniques that you're going to use that fall underneath the blanching category. Now, the first technique is for leafy greens and green vegetables that are not starchy. The second is blanching starchy root vegetables such as carrots or potatoes. And the last is oil blanching, which is almost par cooking or par poaching in oil. Now, the Mac Daddy of them all, the one that's really based in science that you really need to understand is how and why you use a certain technique for blanching green vegetables. Now, a quick overview of this technique is all you're really doing on the surface is you're bringing salted water to a boil. You drop in your green vegetables to be blanched. Wait 30 seconds to 3 minutes, depending on what you're blanching, and then shock in an ice water bath. That's the basic technique for blanching green vegetables. Now, it really is that simple, but let's look at it in more detail so we can gain a deeper understanding of what this process really entails and the underlying scientific techniques that are going on. So let's talk about chlorophyll. And chlorophyll is what makes a green vegetable green. It's what gives off that green pigment. Now, the enemy of chlorophyll is acid. Now, since most vegetables are slightly acidic, when they're cooked in boiling water, this acid is released and can destabilize a chlorophyll molecule. Now, the reason why this happens is a chlorophyll molecule is made up of carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen atoms with a magnesium atom right in the center. This magnesium atom can be nudged out of place by the presence of acid in the blanching water, which is leached from the vegetables being blanched themselves. Now, one of the ways to minimize this effect is a short cooking time in large amounts of water, because heat will also actually nudge this magnesium molecule out of place. So if you're cooking or you're blanching your green vegetables in a large amount of boiling water, number one, you're going to have a temperature recovery time a lot quicker. It's right when you drop in your green vegetables, the water's going to come back to a boil a lot faster, which is going to cook your vegetables more rapidly and help preserve that green color. Also, the acid that's released during the cooking process from the green vegetables will be more diluted by the larger amounts of water, and it'll have less of an effect of nudging that magnesium atom out of the center of your chlorophyll molecule, which will destabilize and make it turn gray and ungreen, basically. Now, one of the first things you'll notice when you drop green vegetables, especially leafy greens, into boiling water is that the green color will almost immediately intensify within the first few seconds. This is caused by a sudden expansion and ultimately the escape of gases trapped in between the plant cells. So usually these gas pockets cloud the green color of vegetables, almost like trying to look at a colorful picture through a foggy piece of glass. Now, when these gas cells collapse, the human eye can pick up the green pigments much easier. So Thomas Keller touched on this a little bit in his French Laundry cookbook, where he talks about the importance of what he calls deep water blanching to quickly cook the vegetables before they start to lose their green color. And this is the technique that the French have been using for a long time, even before the actual underlying science of the chlorophyll molecule was discovered. Because basically what's going on, like we already know, is that having a large amount of water would dilute the acids released from the vegetables, giving you a larger window of time before the chlorophyll molecule becomes destabilized. See, but acid isn't the only thing you have to worry about for the destabilization of your chlorophyll molecule. Green vegetables contain an enzyme called chlorophyllase, which is most active between 150 and 170 degrees Fahrenheit, or 66 degrees and 77 degrees Celsius. And this is responsible, this enzyme, when it's activated, for the rapid discoloration of green vegetables. So using deep water blanching gives you enough retained heat in the water itself to keep the temperature far above 170 degrees Fahrenheit, and most preferably, you want to keep that temperature as close to the boiling point as possible. So the general rule of thumb is you want your blanching water to recover back up to the full boiling point within 15 to 20 seconds after you drop your green vegetables into the boiling water. Now, this heat window in which the chlorophyllase enzyme is the most active is also one of the main reasons why you want to shock your green vegetables in ice water after the main blanching process. The whole idea behind this is that you're going to rapidly drop the temperature of your green vegetables past that window in which the enzyme is the most active, and then keep on rapidly dropping that temperature to set that color. That's what they're talking about when they say set that color. It's actually dropping it below the point in which that enzyme is active. But also the shocking in the ice water will stop that cooking process dead in its tracks, making sure that your vegetables don't overcook and become mushy. Now, another important component to blanching your vegetables, and this goes for all sorts of blanching, but especially your green vegetables, is the addition of salt. Now, there's a couple of different reasons why you add in your salt, and number one is flavor. Right? Of course, you're going to add some flavor to your greens with a little bit of salted water. And generally, you want your salted water to taste almost like seawater, but not quite as salty. That's just a general rule of thumb. Now, a lot of people also tell you that temperature, right? You want to add salt to your blanching water because it will raise the temperature. And we know how important it is to keep that high temperature maintained during the blanching process. And this is true, but it's not really the reason why you add salt. See, according to Robert Wolk, author of What Einstein Told His Cook, which is a great book, and I'll put a link to this in the show notes. Adding 1 tablespoon of salt, or 20 grams to be exact, to 5 quarts of water will cause the water's boiling point to rise by 0.07 of 1 degree Fahrenheit. So it really has a negligible impact on the temperature of your boiling water. But there's also another reason besides flavor where the addition of salt is really, really important. And that is salt helps to keep your green vegetables green. Now, remember before we were talking about how acid released from boiling vegetables can destabilize chlorophyll molecules. Well, some chefs will try and cancel out this acidity by adding baking soda, which is sodium bicarbonate, and it's a very alkaline substance. Now, making your water more alkaline with the addition of alkaline substance, whether it's sodium bicarbonate or something else that's alkaline, will actually counteract the negative effects on the acid. The more alkaline your water is, the harder it is for that hydrogen atom, which is very much prevalent in acidic blanching water, that hydrogen atom is then going to go and replace the magnesium atom in the middle of that chlorophyll molecule, destabilizing it, which is going to lead to discoloration. Now, the problem with this technique, however, is that sodium bicarbonate breaks down the complex carbohydrates contained in the vegetables, which can make them mushy, not to mention sodium bicarbonate tastes like soap. Now that we got the geek speak out of the way, here's the punchline. Adding salt to your blanching water basically accomplishes the same thing by making it harder for the hydrogen atoms to break through the cell membranes and replace the magnesium atom at the center of the chlorophyll.
Chlorophyll? More like borophyll.
All right, I guess it is possible that maybe I went a little overboard, but, you know, I am a bit of a food geek, so, you know.
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Okay, well, moving on. So now that we've covered all the green vegetables and blanching of greens and all that sciencey stuff behind it, let's talk briefly about blanching root vegetables. Now, the main difference is you always want to start with salted water, but in the case of root vegetables, is after you prep them, so say you're going to prep your carrots, you're going to peel down your baby carrots and clean them, and you're ready to blanch them. You want to start your blanching process in cold salted water. Now, the reason why you want to do this is because the starches in root vegetables, such as carrots and potatoes, are more dense. And so if you drop them into boiling hot water, the starches on the outside are going to cook a lot more rapidly than the starches on the inside. So this will allow the complex starches to cook more evenly. Now, the salt is there for seasoning. And again, once you get your root vegetables to the proper doneness, when they're about al dente, which means firm to the bite, but they're still going to have a little bit of give and they're cooked nice and evenly all the way through, just like how you shocked your green vegetables, you're going to do the same thing to your root vegetables. And this is more just to stop the cooking process, since obviously most root vegetables aren't green. In fact, I can't really think of one off the top of my head that is. Now, the third and final blanching technique is oil blanching. Now, oil blanching is most commonly done with potatoes and most notably in the production of French fries. So traditionally, when you make French fries, they are placed in oil twice. On the first time is the oil blanching process, where they're dunked into oil that's at about 275 degrees Fahrenheit or 135 degrees Celsius. Now, this kills off the enzyme which causes oxidation, which will, you know, turn your potatoes brown. But it will also par cook the French fries so that next time they can be fried at a higher temperature to get that classic crispy, crunchy outside and fluffy center. Now, a little side note on this, if you really want to get into the real nitty-gritty geeky speak of the perfect French fry, Dave Arnold over at Cooking Issues did a really kind of cool post where he was using all sorts of he tested all sorts of different frying temperatures and enzymes to break down the starches, and just way beyond what I would ever do to accomplish the supposed perfect French fry. But it's an incredibly interesting read. And the process that they came up with to have the best texture French fry was just that, quite the process. But again, if you want to really get into the in-depth behind-the-scenes look at how potatoes react with different enzymes and the oil that it cooks in, head on over to stellacolony.com and check out the episode 4 show notes, and I'll have a link that'll guide you directly to that post over on Cooking Issues. Now, another way that I like to use this oil blanching technique is with fingerling potatoes. And this is a really great method that I use a lot. And I call them smashed fingerlings when I do them in the Stella restaurant. And all I'm doing is I'm taking whole fingerlings and I'll throw in some aromatics, like maybe a couple cloves of a crushed garlic, some sliced shallots, maybe a couple sprigs of thyme or other herbs. Rosemary also works nice as well. And I cover them with cold olive oil. And I'll gently bring that olive oil up to temperature, and what will happen is as the potatoes get hot, the water will start to turn into steam, you know, in the potatoes, and it'll start to kind of do a simmering thing. And once I see my oil bubbling, which is caused by the release of water from the potatoes, I'm going to turn my flame down to just, you know, a nice low simmer and let them gently simmer and bubble away until they're tender all the way through. And I leave the skins on during this process because, number one, you know, peeling fingerling potatoes really sucks. But number two, it actually adds a nice texture. Now, the next step is right before the potatoes are perfectly cooked all the way through, you want to turn off the flame and let them cool down and finish their cooking process as that oil cools. Now, once the potatoes have cooled, remove them from the oil, press them on your cutting board or your work surface just enough to slightly smash them flat. But you don't want to crush them enough to where they separate. You want to keep them whole. And then what will happen is you're kind of almost have like this potato patty. And then what I love to do with this is I'll just drop it into my deep fryer, you know, just hot oil at about 375 degrees. And when they get golden brown and crispy, I'll take them out, throw them in a bowl with a line with a little bit of a paper towel to help soak up the extra oil, salt them with some good kosher salt. Sometimes I'll throw in some minced garlic, a little bit of fried rosemary is really nice. And it goes really good with any sort of meat dish you want to serve. Just by themselves, you will give them your guests a little side of aioli and these fried potatoes, and they will love them. And I'll go ahead and do a simple recipe post for these potatoes as well, so that way you don't have to remember this whole process. But it really is a simple process, and it's a great sort of example of what can be accomplished with oil blanching root vegetables. Now, your homework assignment for this episode is to take this blanching technique and run with it, right? So if you're going to do green vegetables, a good place to start is possibly go out and buy some French green beans or something along those lines, or maybe some spinach. You want to go through the boiling and blanching process where you blanch them and you shock them in the ice water to help cool them down rapidly and set that color. And then from there, you're going to do your secondary process where you can either saute up that spinach or saute up those green beans and some butter and some salt and pepper and just play around with it. I know I'm not giving you complete recipes for these things yet, and that's pretty much by design, because I want you to focus on the blanching process and see how that affects the color, flavor, and texture of your finished green. Now, you can also do this for your homework. You can also do the same thing with blanching the root vegetables. You can go out and get some baby carrots and start them in the cold salted water, bring them to a boil once they're tender, shock them in ice water. Or you can try your hand at making the fingerling potatoes that we talked about in the oil blanching segment. So any of these are fine for your homework assignment for this episode. And again, you can always take video and pictures of it and post them over on stellaculinary.com in the episode 4 show notes, and you can get some feedback and also share your great creations with the rest of the community. Now, before we get into our culinary quick tip, just a couple of quick things I want to talk about. Number one, I am planning on doing a video on blanching. It's actually going to be a part of our basic skills cooking series, and I'm going to do videos on sautéing, blanching, braising, all those sort of basic techniques or basic cooking techniques that you need to know in the kitchen. And I'm going to release this as a separate, you know, video series on both stellacolonial.com, and I'll also make it available in HD in the iTunes store, obviously for free, just like we do everything else. Now, as of the recording of this episode, I haven't actually shot this video yet, but keep on checking back to the episode 4 show notes because I will put up this video series pretty soon. Also, we have just released our schedule on in-person cooking classes. So if you're going to make a trip to the Tahoe area, or we are in Truckee, so if you're going to make a trip to Truckee, you can always stay at the Cedar House Sport Hotel, which Stella Culinary is obviously a part of. And we do stay packages. So if you want to come up and take an in-person cooking class with myself, you can stay at the hotel, get treated like royalty, like we treat all of our guests. And you can see all the upcoming cooking classes that we have over on stellacolonial.com. There's going to be an events and classes tab, and you click on that, and underneath the events and classes tab is a class schedule. So go check it out. If there's something that piques your interest, you know, click on that, make a reservation, and we do kind of fill up rather quickly. So let us know if you want to come up and take a cooking class. And also, too, if you get a group of people together, we will do a custom cooking class for your group. And this can range anything from, you know, hey, I want to, you know, me and my friends really want to learn how to make bread. So we'll do, you know, a cooking class that incorporates the wood fire oven and all sorts of fun stuff. But we've also had people come up and say, hey, we want to take over your kitchen for the night and do a an Iron Chef-esque battle between me and my friends, because my buddy, he thinks he can cook better than me, and I don't think he can. So we want to settle this once and for all. And we've done that before, and that's a lot of fun as well. Really, your imagination is your only limitation to our custom cooking classes. So let us know. Shoot me an email, jacob@stellacolonial.com, if you're interested in taking a class. Or again, you can go and contact us through our webpage, stellacolonial.com, and check out our class schedule there as well. So in today's culinary quick tip, I'm going to go over real quick on how to make tomato concassé, which uses the blanching techniques we talked about before, because also another way to use blanching is to help peel and remove the skin of fruits and vegetables. So tomato concassé is used obviously with a tomato, and most notably we'll use a Roma or a plum tomato, but this will work with just about any major tomato out there. And so what you do is you get your boiling salted water going on the stove, and make sure it's at a nice rolling boil, and you take your tomato and you take out the core end. There's just going to be a little core where the stem attaches, so you're going to cut that out with your paring knife. And then on the exact opposite side, on the tip of the tomato, you're going to cut in an X. And I actually like to cut this X all the way down along the side, but you only want to cut as deep as the skin. You don't want to cut into the flesh. Once that X is cut into the skin, but not into the flesh, you're going to drop it into your boiling salted water for about 60 seconds to 90 seconds at the very most. And what will happen is it's going to par-cook the tomato just enough to allow the skins to release. You're going to take the tomato out using a spider. You don't want to use tongs because you might crush the tomato. So you want to take it out using a strainer or a spider. You want to drop it into ice water to shock it and to stop that cooking process. The point here is to peel the tomato and dice it, not to actually cook it through. So you still want it to taste like raw tomato. Now, once the tomato is thoroughly cooled in the ice bath, it's going to take about anywhere from 3 to 5 minutes. You're going to remove the tomato. And using a paring knife, you're basically going to just take the skin that's already released from the tomato, and you're going to sandwich it in between the knife and your thumb, and you're going to just peel that skin back. You don't even have to cut the skin. You're just going to pull it back and peel it back, and it'll remove nicely. Now, a little trick with these skins, if you lay them down on a piece of parchment paper on a sheet tray or a Silpat, you can then leave them in a warm place in your kitchen for about 24 hours, and they'll dry out into these beautiful, crispy little skins that you can then use to garnish any number of plates. Now, once you have your tomato peeled, you're then going to go through the regular process of seeding and dicing your tomato by cutting into quarters, running your knife along the inside of the flesh to remove the seeds, and then doing the dicing process. Now, I know you already know how to seed and dice a tomato because in episode 1 show notes, I did a link to our 30 plus knife skill technique videos, which one of them is seeding and dicing a tomato. So assuming that you study like the good student that you are. Also, though, in the episode 4 show notes for blanching, I will actually put this full technique on how to do a tomato concasse from start to finish. I will shoot an HD video, and I will post it to the episode 4 show notes. And that's it for this episode of the Stella Culinary School Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. Next episode, we're going to talk about some standard starches, including risotto, polenta, and mashed potatoes. Have some questions or comments? Head on over to stellaculinary.com/forum. It's a great place to get those questions answered. You can always Twitter me, at Chef Jacob, and sign up for our seasonal cooking newsletter. It's free and a great resource. Until next time, this is Jacob with the Stella Culinary School Podcast, reminding you to cook with passion.